Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is November 10th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. This is the Week Ahead segment. A handful of topics to get to. We have the global protests that are continuing. We're going to talk about that. We have just a reminder with sort of the Brexit and the UK elections update. The reason I bring this up is there's really no breaking news or anything to sort of be on the lookout for, but just to keep this fresh in our minds as we make our way through November and December. UK elections are slated for next month. Easy way to remember is December 12th. 12-12 will be UK elections. I do want to mention something about the Bank of England as well. We'll get back to that. I want to talk about Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, is set to testify for his biannual testimony before a House committee and before a Senate committee. We're going to talk about that. We have President Donald Trump giving a speech this week before the Economic Club of New York. It is highly anticipated that he is going to be discussing the U.S.-China trade talks, progress or lack thereof. I'm sure it'll be a host of other things, but prime and center is going to be any discussion on the U.S.-China trade talks. We have the continuation of the impeachment inquiry. We are now going to be moving this week to the public hearings. On Wednesday, we're going to have two individuals testifying, and on Friday, a third. These individuals have already testified. We already have their transcripts released. We'll talk about that. We also have Nikki Haley, the former United States ambassador to the United Nations, out with a new book. We predicted this months ago. She is now a board member on Boeing. Drain the swamp, folks. They're right there, military-industrial complex. She leaves the government. She resigns. She goes straight into being a board member on Boeing. She is out with allegations in her book saying that former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and former Secretary of Homeland Defense, or Homeland Security, I should say, and Chief of Staff John Kelly tried to, quote, recruit her to undermine President Donald Trump in various policies, primarily on foreign policy. Is Miss Haley auditioning for Secretary of State? We'll talk about that. But first, to the global protests. You know, we still have the protests and the riots taking place in Chile. Given the volume and the duration and the severity of those protests, we had the Asian Pacific Economic Summit get canceled. This is yet to be rescheduled, yet to be relocated. This is where President Xi and President Trump were supposed to meet, and this was going to take place this week or next week. I don't recall the date, but I know it was, I think it was the 17th or 18th of November, so next week. These gentlemen were supposed to sit down and sign phase one of this epic U.S.-China trade deal, which, you know, is really just a figment of everybody's imagination, particularly that of the president. And of course, there's a continuation of White House drama surrounding a phase one deal, which is yet to be complete, even though you had Donald Trump a couple weeks ago. You know, piece of paper, folks. I got it right here. Vice Premier Liu He, right here. Fantastic. Man's a great negotiator. He's tough, boy. He's tough, baby, but we love him. Got a beautiful letter from him. This is what we're signing right here. You know, 3 weeks later, whatever it is, there's nothing. There's nothing. And then we have last week, you got Larry Kudlow out there pretty much agreeing to a statement, to a press release that was put out there by China saying, we're going to make progress. Progress is being made on phase one. But both the Chinese and the U.S. government are in agreement that we are going to be rolling back tariffs proportionately. Larry Kudlow comes out and says, yeah, that's what's going to happen. Yeah, that's what's going to happen. Peter Navarro, the idiot, he comes out and says, nope, that's not what's going to happen. The only person who's going to make that decision is Donald Trump. And of course, Donald Trump comes out and says, yeah, you know, I'm still thinking about it, but we're probably not going to do it. We're not going to roll back tariffs. We're not going to do it. So I told you folks, this all comes down to credibility. For a year and a half, we've had the U.S. being the loud blabbermouth trying to manipulate the markets, have done so rather effectively, if you will. We talk about it here all the time, much to our dismay, but nevertheless, that is reality. Trying to juice these markets makes no difference if it's true, false, or indifferent. Just manipulate, manipulate, manipulate. It's a shell game. It's a con game. We said, what happens if and when the quiet Chinese now start to speak up and throw their own things out there in the press? Well, they just did. And now the markets don't know who to believe. exactly what I told you was going to happen. And I told you, if and when the markets believe the Chinese over the president of the United States, if they believe the Communist Chinese Party over the president of the United States, we got a big problem. Forget the soybeans, forget the pork bellies, forget the corn. We got a much bigger problem. Okay? So that's something that we have to pay attention to. We're going to have to see what markets do on Monday. It is Veterans Day tomorrow. The bond market will be closed here in the United States. The stock market will be open. So I think that might sort of tilt the hand as to how Donald Trump presents himself and his message in regards to phase one or a broader U.S.-China trade deal. If markets sell off, maybe Donald Trump really wants to juice the markets and say everything's okay. Or who knows, maybe he has a short position in the markets and he's going to say, well, we're not going to roll it back. We don't like the fact that the Chinese are coming out with propaganda, which would be very rich for that to come out of his mouth, but it's not beneath him. So anything could happen. I believe that takes place on Tuesday of this week. Again, Donald Trump giving a speech before the Economic Club of New York. So that takes us again back to these global protests. Chile, we now have the Bolivian president resigning. That country is split in half as well. They could be on the verge of civil war. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully it doesn't get that serious, but they are extremely divided in Bolivia, which they have not seen in generations. We had Spanish elections take place Sunday evening. The socialists have won in Spain. However, they did not win by a large enough margin to really create a strong government. So it's going to be fragmented. There's going to have to be a lot of jockeying for position to get a real government formed over in Spain. Don't forget, you still have a lot of uproar and uncertainty surrounding the Catalonian independence movement, which has caused a lot of protests in and of itself. You have members of that movement who have been imprisoned, and a lot of people want them released. So I told you, folks, it's the weakest links first, and now it's going to start making its way to some of these larger economies. Spain is one of these larger economies. When you have political uprisings in Iraq, which, I mean, people are getting killed in Iraq, by the way, if you're not aware of this. People are getting killed in these protests. You have them in Iraq, you have them in Egypt, you had them in Algeria, you have them in Lebanon, where you had the prime minister in Lebanon resign. Now, you have the Bolivian president resigning. You've had big cabinet shuffle down in Chile, and you've had the cancellation of the Asia-Pacific Economic Summit, which was supposed to take place in a week or so. You have a continuation of the Hong Kong protests, which have now entered their sixth month. The sixth month of protests. Most of these protests are taking place over the weekend. However, today in Hong Kong is obviously Monday. They are protesting today in a rare day of protest on a weekday. So far, they have been violent. An individual has been shot, a protester has been shot by the police. This individual is in critical condition. Regardless of whether or not the police officer was justified in the shooting, and it appears that it may be the case that it is somewhat justified because this protester may have been reaching for the officer's gun, although everybody's innocent until proven guilty. I'm not, you know, trying to get ahead of anything, but I'm just saying this is not a good visual. When you want these types of protests to calm down, not rise or escalate to violence, and you already have one of the driving factors behind the continuation of these protests, at least from what's being reported, is that these protesters are saying that the riot police are being too violent and they need to be investigated. Well, if you now have this take place, a shooting, with this individual now in critical condition and could very well die, that is not going to bode well for these protests to stop anytime soon. And guess who's watching in the background, just waiting in the wings to swoop in there and do something about this? Because the further along this goes, the more embarrassing this becomes to the Chinese Communist Party. They don't like it. If this was taking place in mainland China, this would have been dealt with a long time ago. We may never even have heard about it. But the fact that this is taking place in Hong Kong, you got Bloomberg, you got CNN, you got everybody and their mother with cameras out there, and it is known to the rest of the world. You have laws that are being passed here in Congress, in the United States, in Congress, to deal with this matter, to sort of get everybody behind this for human rights. And this just throws another wrench into the negotiations regarding the U.S.-China trade war. You also have Taiwan, which is starting to sort of throw their chest, flex their muscles out there at China, because China still believes that Taiwan is their territory. But this is a very similar situation between Hong Kong, Taiwan, and China. The longer these protests take place in Hong Kong, the more emboldened perhaps people in mainland China can be to riot or protest against the Chinese Communist Party. The longer these protests take place in Hong Kong, it could embolden further the Taiwanese government to say, look, keep off our backs. We're an independent nation. We're our own sovereign. That's it. End of story. And the United States has agreements with both Hong Kong and Taiwan. So if this thing gets heated, it's going to cause a problem, economically, geopolitically speaking. So I'm telling you, folks, everything's interconnected. This trade war with the Chinese, with the United States, this isn't just about soybeans and pork bellies. Okay? It's much deeper than that. You are all aware of this if you follow this podcast. Those bigger ticket items, when was the last time you heard anybody in the administration or China even really talk about them? It's probably been weeks, if not months. Everything's all about agriculture right now. And I've told you for months that China was not going to sit on their hands and simply wait for a deal to be agreed to before they went out and started buying soybeans and pork bellies and grains and corn and everything else from somebody else. And that's exactly what they've been doing. Meanwhile, here in the United States, John Q. Public, you and me, via our tax dollars, are bailing out farms. Meanwhile, you have a surge in farming bankruptcies. That is not winning by any stretch of the imagination. The Chinese are making deals with the Brazilians, with the Russians, over last week with the French, all for agricultural products. So how is there going to be any major deal with U.S. farmers now? How are you simply going to replace what we've lost? Because the slack has been picked up from Brazil, Russia, other countries as well, and now France. You don't just sign a deal and magically need more things. It's not how it works. And I think there's probably a misconception out there by a lot of people that think that international trade takes place between governments. It doesn't. It doesn't. Government officials are the ones who negotiate the deals, but they don't negotiate all the deals between your small company and a small company over in China or any other company or any other country for that matter. There are still a resemblance of a market economy on both sides, despite massive government intervention. If you don't want to trade with a counterpart in China, you don't have to. Same holds true for a Chinese company. If they don't want to buy something from the United States, they can go somewhere else. So just because you sign a piece of paper doesn't make a difference. Now, you might have some influence, obviously, from the government. And obviously, governments do buy things. But they're not going to make up the slack of all these soybeans and pork bellies and everything else. That's not how it works. So you have to understand that just because something is signed, it doesn't mean that demand all of a sudden is larger than what it was before. If the total market demand for Chinese soybeans, if there are more, and I'm making this number up because I don't know what it is, but just say for the sake of example, it's $1 billion. $1 billion. You sign a piece of paper with the United States, it doesn't just become $2 billion. That's not how it works. If they only need $1 billion, that's all they're going to take. You're not going to make something up. We wouldn't do it here. They're not going to do it there. It's all a con game, folks. The global slowdown was starting well before this trade war ever even started. You know this if you follow this podcast. The trade war causes more uncertainty. It's a con job. It's a shell game. It's used for market manipulation. It's all it is. It's all it is. And the further along we make our way through the 2020 presidential campaign, one of two things are going to happen. Donald Trump's going to buckle, and it's going to make him look weak because he's supposed to be the greatest deal maker ever, but we have no deal going 2 years on. Or he's going to say, screw it. My base loves the fact that I'm the tough guy. I'm the strong man. Sometimes you can't have a deal. Sometimes you got to know when to walk away. He might do that just to make it look like he's the strong guy in this. And he's going to continue to pick on China, which was a winning bet in 2016. They're taking all our jobs. They're smart negotiators. They're tough. They don't want to come across the line to do all these things because Donald J. Trump is not going to sign anything that is worse for the United States. It has to be better for us than it is for China. They're not coming across the line. We're walking. And it'll make them look tough. And his base will eat it up. The question is, will middle America eat it up? Right now, not so much because these are the farmers. And they're getting slaughtered. So it's not good. Pay attention to these global protests. This is not transitory. This is history in the making. Weakest links go first. It's going to start making its way through the developed world. Believe me when I tell you. Now over across the pond, just a quick update with the Bank of England, keeping rates unchanged. However, there were some members of the board over there in the Bank of England that are saying, well, you know what, we might have to cut rates in the future. Well, who's surprised by this? Are you kidding me? You're going to join everybody else? Well, what a surprise. What a shocker. Did you think about this during tea time or what? I mean, you're flexing your muscles trying to be tough for the past few months. Whoa. Well, you know, regardless of what happens with Brexit, we might increase interest rates. The hell you are. You're not even going to come close to increasing them. I'll be really surprised if they increase interest rates. Not going to happen. Makes no difference what happens in these elections next month. Makes no difference what they do with Brexit. Brexit, no Brexit. Deal, no deal. They're cutting rates. They are cutting rates. They're going to be joining the rest of the bottom feeders. Believe me when I tell you, it's just a matter of time. Talking about bottom feeders, Jerome Powell to testify before Congress in his biannual review. He will be speaking again 2 days, 1 day before a House panel, 2nd day before a Senate panel. What will they discuss? Interesting, isn't it? I'm sure he will tell them that everything is great. The economy here in the United States is in a good place. We did a 180 on policy, cutting interest rates 3 times out of the last 4 months, began a balance sheet expansion, which was formerly known as quantitative easing, although this time you're not supposed to call it that. But that's because we just wanted to get ahead of everything. There's a lot of uncertainties going on around the world, uncertainties with U.S.-China trade, Brexit, protests going all over the place. Whole bunch of stuff going on. We just want to make sure we're doing well. But right here in the United States, we're perfect. We're fine. Everything's okay. The U.S. consumer is resilient. Inflation is tame and muted and under control. We know what we're doing here at the United States Federal Reserve. Believe me when we tell you. What type of questions are they going to ask him? Are they going to ask him why the Federal Reserve is intervening in the overnight repo market? Something they haven't done since the great financial crisis. Probably not. Are they going to press him on it? Do they know what they would be asking him if they even went down that pathway? Probably not. Is anybody going to push him on the real inflation figures? Because these are members of Congress. These are our congressmen and women, our senators. They answer to us. Is inflation? It's muted. It's tame. It's even below where we want it to be. Is that true for you? Has your rent gone up? You want to buy a house? How have housing prices performed? Got a mortgage rate? Where's that at? Got a car payment? What's the price of a car? Going up, going down? Groceries? Up, down. Utilities? Up or down? Education costs? Up or down? Come on. Inflation's only 1.8%. Everything's fine. You believe that? That's what he's going to tell them. That's what it's going to be. It's an insult to all of us. There is no checks and balances. This is a government and a system in this country that was set up for the purpose of checks and balances. Who keeps the reins on the Federal Reserve? Nobody. Nobody does. Congress doesn't. The judiciary doesn't. The executive branch doesn't. Donald Trump, he's coming out. He's being rather vocal against them, but only because they haven't cut interest rates fast enough and deep enough. Remember, Thunder Thumbs wants this crap in negative interest rate territory. And he wants quantitative easing. Well, he's got quantitative easing. And we said last week, buckle up and get ready. Because we ain't seen nothing yet. Negative interest rates. Remember, Christine Lagarde, what we said, savings versus jobs last week? They're already taking your savings, folks, over in Europe. They're already doing it here, really, because you have real negative interest rates here in the United States. They are taking your savings. Better to have a job than to have savings. Well, why work? Don't you work so you can save so you don't have to work? Why are these our only two choices? Having a job or having savings? I guarantee you, you're going to end up with neither. And I take no pleasure in saying that whatsoever. But that's what I see. That's why I tell you to stay diversified and stay vigilant, because you don't know what these people are going to do. They are pulling the levers. We have a continuation of deterioration. It makes no difference. Those Hong Kong protests, you got the Hang Seng, the Hong Kong market down 2.8% right now, down 800 points. You think that's going to continue or what? It's going on 6 months, and they're protesting on a Monday. Where's the end? Where's the bottom? I mean, I'd rather them just ask Mr. Powell, what's your favorite color? You wearing suspenders or a belt? Did you put your shoes on this morning, or did somebody put them on for you? Come on, answer the question. I'd rather those questions be asked, because there's not going to be any seriousness taken to this. He's not going to be challenged. Maybe one person might challenge him. Maybe one person will ask a question about the dollar. Oh, well, we're not responsible for the dollar, even though under these yahoos for the past 100 years, the value of the U.S. dollar has only, you know, lost 97%. So what? So what? Makes no difference. What about the trillion-dollar deficits? Well, that's really not our problem. That's your problem, Congress. But we have no problem financing it. That's why we have quantitative easing. So, I mean, it's not good, but that's really your problem. But continue with it, because by all means, we'll continue to print the money so we can finance this insanity. There's no checks and balances. The Federal Reserve could stop Congress, by the way, if you understand this. But they don't. All Jay Powell would have to say this week is say, you guys are out of control, and I am going to use all of my influence within the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates. So you guys have to stop with these trillion-dollar deficits. You have to get your fiscal house in order. And one of the ways that we can force that is by increasing the cost of money to borrow. That'll never happen. But the Federal Reserve could be a check on Congress. It's not going to happen. This week, Bill Taylor, George Kent, and Marie Yovanovitch, three key players in this impeachment inquiry, are going to be testifying this week. Misters Bill Taylor and George Kent on Wednesday, Miss Marie Yovanovitch on Friday. I'm sure this will be a public circus, one degree or another. However, this is when you start to get the public display. People aren't going to go and read thousands and thousands of pages worth of transcripts, but they will listen to testimony in 5-minute, 10-minute, 15-minute segments on the mainstream media, YouTube, and Twitter. They will do that. They will listen to these people. The question now becomes, who will the American people believe? Who will they give a higher degree of credibility to? Mr. Taylor, Mr. Kent, Ms. Yovanovitch, and other ambassadors and members of the State Department who have given their careers and risked their lives in the State Department, in the Foreign Service Department, in the military, because that's where a lot of these people come from. Or are they going to give more credibility to Donald Trump? Again, folks, there's that word credibility. This is what happens when you lie and you cry woof. When do we believe you? When do we believe you? So this now becomes about credibility. It's now the optics of television. Donald Trump is usually the master manipulator when it comes to television. You got to tip your hat to the man. He's very good at it. He gives you that TV tease. All I got to do, I'm going to tease you a little bit. Here it comes. You ready? I'm going to drop names. I'm going to declassify a few documents, and everything's going to be undone. I'm going to have these people dead to rights. For 2-3 years, we've been hearing this nonsense. You've seen nothing declassified. You have nobody arrested. You have a continuation of the Mueller investigation, the impeachment inquiry. If he has documentation that can put this, stop this thing in its tracks, and maybe just calm the nerves and the volume of this country with its divisiveness, why isn't he doing it? Is he out of his mind? What's wrong here? And of course, if he has those documents that has everybody dead to rights, then why is he asking President Zelensky of Ukraine to investigate his political rival Joe Biden? Remember that question? It's an interesting question, isn't it? I don't know. Maybe the man continues to lie. Maybe it's just a TV tease. Stay tuned next week, folks. We got a doozy for you. That's all it is. Just continue to jerk everybody around. And remember, folks, remember, both sides can be guilty. If there is information that comes out and you have the Democrats found guilty, or there's implications that the Democrats have committed a crime or have done some shady things, particularly under the Obama administration in regards to investigating Donald Trump and his campaign and his administration, investigate them, lock them up, and throw away the key. Of course, everybody's innocent until proven guilty, but that does not mean that Donald Trump is innocent of some of the charges that are levied against him. He clearly did ask a foreign country to investigate a political rival. It's clear as day. It's in the transcript. All of these t-shirts and all of these Twitter feeds, read the transcript. We did. And we know it's not a verbatim transcript. But we do know that he asked President Zelensky, hey, can you do us a favor? Look into 2016, look into CrowdStrike, look into the server. Oh, and by the way, look into this Burisma Holdings, this energy company, and I think they got some business with Hunter Biden and Joe Biden. Can you do that for us? Now, again, I tried to defend the president. I tried to give him an out if he had had this conversation with the previous administration. And in this dragnet, you had Joe Biden and Hunter Biden's name come up. And you're just saying, hey, Mr. President Zelensky, congratulations. I want to make sure we have a strong relationship with the Ukrainian government. Congratulations on your win. Just giving you up to speed here. I want to make sure that you continue investigating these matters. It's not what he said. It's not what he said. He said, do us a favor. Marie Yovanovitch was also mentioned in this transcript, although not by name, if I recall correctly. Not by name. She was just the unnamed ambassador who was going to, quote, go through some things. And, of course, that meant she was going to get fired, which she did, even though, according to testimony, she was fired. Although members within the State Department said, well, there's no real reason for cause. The president doesn't want you there, and that's pretty much it. Which, the president's the president of the executive branch. He wants somebody gone, he wants somebody gone. But it's just interesting to see, because a lot of this background noise still comes from Rudy Giuliani. This is the person that it appears from testimony and news reports that are out there. When it comes to Ukraine, President Trump is trusting Rudy Giuliani above and beyond his State Department. And Rudy Giuliani is not a part of the U.S. government. He is a private citizen, and he is the personal attorney for President Donald J. Trump. So that in and of itself is a little fishy. And don't forget, you got those two associates and cronies associated with Rudy Giuliani. What's their names? Lav, Les, and Igor. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. And then if you look at them, I mean, you can't make this up. You can't write this. They've been arrested. And now I think there's a report floating out there that one of the attorneys for one of these gentlemen is saying that Rudy Giuliani basically ordered these guys to go over to Ukraine to try to negotiate some sort of deal, back door, back channel, if you will, to investigate the Bidens. And in return, the U.S. would continue giving aid. So, I mean, if that proves to be true, that is not going to bode well for Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani. Okay. You also have Donald Trump out there pretty much saying he doesn't even know who Ambassador Sondland is. Remember, this is the political appointee. This is the gentleman, Ambassador Sondland. To the European Union, by the way, this isn't small potatoes. This isn't Malta. No disrespect to Malta, but this is the European Union. Okay. One of the most powerful allies for the United States. Largest economy in the world as a bloc. This isn't small potatoes. By the way, Ukraine is not a part of the European Union. Yet, nevertheless, you have Ambassador Sondland and Rudy Giuliani involved. Okay, he's a political appointee because he gave about $1 million to Donald Trump's inaugural committee. Okay, that's par for the course. This happens. I told you this before. Not need to raise eyebrows. This is what happens. This is what you do. You pay that kind of access. This is what you get. You get an ambassadorship. Ambassador Sondland changed his testimony, if you recall from our podcast last week. He changed his testimony, we are speculating, because he caught wind of those other transcripts that were released. And everybody is saying one thing, and he's saying something else. Oh, yeah, you know what? Let me amend my transcript, which you're allowed to do. Because upon review of the transcript with me and my counsel, it jarred some memories loose. I can recall a few things a little bit more clear. Oh, you know what? There was a quid pro quo. There was, which is what everybody else has been saying. And it's what Donald Trump, sometimes he says there's no quid pro quo. And then sometimes he says, yeah, even if there was, so what? Of course, Mick Mulvaney. Yeah, we do this all the time. Oh, no, we don't. No quid pro quo. Terrible messaging. We've covered this. But Donald Trump is saying, I don't even really know Ambassador Sondland. You can't make this stuff up. Donald Trump would throw his mother under the bus if he had to. I believe this. Anybody who crosses him or says something that might not bode well for him, you're a never Trumper, and he will throw you under the bus. That's what he's going to do. If this thing escalates up the chain, remember, who is it? Rick Perry, Energy Secretary. He's going to be resigning by the end of this year. If you're somewhat involved, he's going to go after you. Rudy Giuliani gets all tangled up in this mess and something really comes out against him, he will throw Rudy Giuliani under the bus. Believe me when I tell you. It's getting very, very interesting. Bill Taylor, George Kent, Marie Yovanovitch testify next week. It's now going to be public. It'll be a circus, but it still comes down to the credibility of these individuals when they testify against the credibility of Donald Trump, who was all over the place, who's basically saying, I don't even know Ambassador Sondland. No, of course you don't. Of course you don't. You just kept him close to your chest in these matters of Ukraine, even though he has nothing to do with Ukraine, and he gave your inaugural committee $1 million. You don't know the guy. All right. Nikki Haley, again, former United States ambassador to the United Nations, resigned a little while ago, out there writing a book. It's just been released. It's also already been tweeted out by Thunder Thumbs by her book. All you have to do, ladies and gentlemen, is flatter this president, tickle, stroke his ego, whatever you got to do, and you are in like Flint. Again, she is claiming that former Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and former Chief of Staff John Kelly attempted to recruit her to undermine Donald Trump. So Tillerson and Kelly are never Trumpers in the world of Donald Trump. Nikki Haley is a patriot and a very loyal customer. I believe Nikki Haley might be auditioning for the position of Secretary of State. Why do I say this? Because there are rumors circulating out there that current Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is contemplating a run for a Senate seat for the state of Kansas. He'd probably be a shoo-in. It's a Republican state. He has the credentials of being, what was he, the CIA director for a little while. Now he's Secretary of State. Kansas is a very red Republican state. Mike Pompeo would probably pretty much be a shoo-in. Not that I imagine that Kansas was up in for contention for a Democrat seat anyway, but who knows? I don't follow Kansas politics that closely. But Mike Pompeo could very well resign, go back to Kansas to run for Senate. That would open up that position of Secretary of State. Well, Nikki Haley, I'm telling you, she has her eyes on that Oval Office, folks. She was governor of South Carolina, ambassador to the United Nations for the United States. She can say, I have my corporate chops, you know, I got those marks up there now because I am a board member of Boeing, and who knows where else she's involved in. She's negotiating, she is auditioning, I should say, for the position of Secretary of State. And then quite the resume she would have to run for President of the United States, which she is likely going to do in the future. So that's it for the week ahead. Not really that's it. That's a lot of information. But front and center, in my opinion, and I'm going to continue to harp on this because I truly believe this, these global protests, this is not transitory. This is history in the making. The weakest links go first. They are crumbling. These governments are crumbling. And that's a good thing because they are corrupt as long as as the day is long, these governments and politicians are corrupt. It's political. It's economic. Revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. It's just a matter of time before it makes its way through the developed world. Believe me when I tell you. Stay diversified. Stay vigilant and stay with the Capital News. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.